Thank you for joining us for this episode of Talking with Religious Historians. This is a short-form episode of our regular Ecclesiastical History Society podcast, wherein we talk to established religious historians to find out more about their careers and what advice they would give early career researchers. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Betts, a historian of early modern British medicine and religion. Thank you for joining us today. For today's episode, we're happy to welcome Professor Alexandra Walsham. Professor Walsham is Professor of Modern History at the University of Cambridge. Her research focuses on the field of the religious and cultural history of early modern Britain and the repercussions of the Protestant and Catholic Reformations set within their European context. She's published extensively on a variety of themes, including post-Reformation Roman Catholicism, religious tolerance and intolerance, the history of the book, religion in the landscape, and the memory of the Reformation. Earlier this year, she published a monograph entitled Generations, Age, Ancestry, and Memory in the English Reformations. Today, Professor Walsham joins us to share her experience of academia and advice on applying for academic funding. Professor Walsham, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode.
Thank you very much, Emily, for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, to begin, would you mind discussing a bit about your academic background and how you came to academia?
Of course. So I did my undergraduate and master's studies in Australia, where I grew up. And then I was fortunate enough to win a Commonwealth scholarship to do my PhD in Cambridge. And I studied under Patrick Collinson, a great historian of Puritanism, and that was an inspiring experience. I think I would say that in the course of my PhD, I didn't really look that far ahead, and I didn't have particular clear career objectives or ambitions. And in some ways, looking back to that time from this vantage point, I'm really surprised at the journey that I've taken. But I then was lucky enough to secure a research fellowship in Cambridge, and before the end of that, I then was appointed to my first lectureship at the University of Exeter, where I taught for 14 years before returning to Cambridge to my present post.
Great, thank you. I want to ask you a little bit more about your most recent monograph. You published one, as I said, in the introduction earlier this year, based on your 2018 Ford Lecture Series, which is entitled Generations, Age, Ancestry, and Memory in the English Reformations. And I will also link that in the episode notes for everyone who wants to check it out. But the research was funded by a Leverhulme Major Research Fellowship. And so I was wondering two things. If you could tell us a little bit more about your book, and then also what drew you to do a Leverhulme Fellowship on this topic.
Yes. So this is a book that, as I say in the preface to it, feels like it was a generation in the making, really. It's a book that it tries to use the lens of the generations as a way of understanding the Reformations. And I look at the Reformations in England as very much a protracted process, a long Reformation. And that immediately draws attention to the fact that it's a development, a process that takes place over multiple generations, and that as those generations pass from one to another, their understanding, their experience, and their memory of the Reformation and the religious changes that are encompassed by that term, which itself is shifting, that also changes over time. So my book tries to examine generation as both a kind of biological unit that passes down families and through bloodlines, through ancestry and lineage. But it also thinks about generation as a social cohort in much the same way that we do nowadays. We speak of generation X and Y and so on. They also, in the early modern period, had a conception of the generations as a kind of collective entity marked out by its consciousness of being people born at a particular moment in time. So whereas most people who've studied generations in history have tended to work on the modern period in the wake of revolutions and wars and major ruptures of different kinds in the 20th century, one of the most sort of striking things that emerged from my research on this topic was the power of that idea of generations, and a very much a biblically shaped and coloured conception of generations in the 16th and 17th centuries. Generation is a word that's pervasive in the Bible, in the English Bible at this time. And it's the, you know, the generations of Adam, the generations of Christ, and all of those ideas are enormously influential in shaping how people encounter and navigate the religious upheavals and the turmoil that was associated with the 16th century Reformation and its repercussions throughout the period up to 1700.
That's fascinating. I'm really intrigued by that and the idea of memory through these different generations. That's a really interesting topic. And you said that that was a while in the making, these ideas. So when was it that you decided, okay, I want to do a major research fellowship on this? What was catalyst for that experience?
Well, of course, when you're a working academic, you're juggling many things at the same time, teaching, administration, and it's very difficult to find concentrated time to work on, you know, an ambitious project of this kind. And so that was the incentive to seek a period of concentrated time funded by the Levy-Hume Trust to allow me to carry out the research for this book, which was conducted in, you know, something like 40 different archives in the UK and elsewhere in the world, and to have the time to write and to reflect on a project, you know, with fewer distractions than you normally do in the course of your usual activities as an academic. So I was delighted and honoured to have been awarded a Levy-Hume Fellowship, which then also gave me the opportunity to write the lectures for Oxford for the Ford Lectures back in 2018. And then also, of course, to reflect on that experience and develop those lectures into what's become, you know, a rather longer book as it emerged. Yeah.
Thank you. What advice do you have for early career researchers or people who are at the end of their PhDs who would like to look for funding and aren't really sure how to go about applying for that?
Yes. Well, of course, it's always a very challenging thing, isn't it, to move from the PhD to the next stage. And almost before you finish the PhD, you have to start thinking about those next steps. I suppose my advice would be to look at the whole range of opportunities that there are. Research fellowships, the Levy-Hume, of course, offers its own early career fellowship scheme. The British Academy, the Institute of Historical Research, administers a number of different fellowship schemes. So find out that information and look at what, and think carefully about what stage is going to be the best for you to apply. And I think what's also really crucial is to think carefully about the project that you are seeking funding for. You want that project to be, in some ways, represent a logical step forward from the doctoral research that you've been doing, but also to represent a new set of challenges. Your people assessing these applications will want to see that you're keen to, you know, to explore new territory, to ask different questions, to think critically about a whole range of different approaches to the subject. And so that statement that you often have to write as part of an application for funding or for a postdoctoral position, that's very, really crucial in the assessment of these applications. So thinking really, you know, deeply and spending the time writing a proposal that's going to capture the imagination and the interest of the people reading many, many applications is vital, I think. And I suppose what I would say there is what I always look for in assessing applications is something that shows intellectual ambition, that's asking, you know, critical and urgent and timely questions. You know, history is often an art of asking the right questions. You need to ask the right questions before you can give the right answers. So I think that's what I'd encourage people to do is be ambitious intellectually and conceptually, and spend the time writing a proposal for a project that's going to capture the imagination of the people assessing it.
Thank you. That's excellent advice. And I think the idea of asking the right questions actually leads right into my next question for you, which is what advice you would have for writing journal articles as you're a co-editor of Past and Present for the past 10 years?
Yes, I recently stepped down after 10 years, but I had a very rewarding time as editor of Past and Present over that period. And I think the advice I would give to early careers scholars is that, you know, writing journal articles takes time, and it's important to invest the time in getting that right. It's not the same as a thesis chapter. It needs to be self-contained. It needs to have a clear set of sort of historiographical frameworks and a clear set of questions and an argument that holds it together. Past and Present, as people perhaps will know, is a journal that seeks to engage a general audience. And I think actually writing an article for any journal that is conscious of how can my work speak to people who aren't immediately in my field, you know, who aren't, you know, within the sort of narrow parameters of the sub-discipline within which I'm working, but that can actually engage people, you know, who might be working on 20th century history or, you know, early medieval Europe, that it has conceptual and thematic ideas and questions at its heart that have a kind of resonance and significance for people working on other topics and other periods of time.
This theme of engaging others who are reading your work seems to be the through line between applying for funding and journal writing. And would you agree that it's making your work, even though it is in a specific subgenre, making that really accessible and meaningful to other people?
Yes. I mean, of course, you know, as historians, we have the advantage that actually the wider public is very interested in history. And, you know, we want our work to speak to and to be accessible to people beyond the academic world. So I think, you know, always striving to communicate clearly and engagingly and to be able to spell out why this detailed research that one is doing actually is meaningful. Why does it matter? You know, there's a classic question of why does it matter and who cares? And I think having those ideas and those questions in the front of your mind as you're working can only be helpful in enabling you to be, you know, a more powerful, you know, communicator and historian, you know, not only within the discipline, but beyond it as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you. That's absolutely wonderful advice for all of us. I just want to ask you one more question before I let you go, which is, what is your favorite part about being an academic?
Well, I mean, being an academic has many, many different dimensions, of course. There's lots of aspects of it that I enjoy enormously. I really enjoy working with PhD students, and I enjoy teaching. I love to come out of a class and feel that sort of excitement of having, you know, had a really lively discussion about a topic and having learnt as much from the students as, you know, hopefully they've learnt something from me at the same time. But I also love a good trip to an archive, and I wouldn't be a historian without those days of opening up a box or opening up a folder and wondering what you're going to find inside, and that sort of moment in the archive when you sort of think, oh, how wonderful that is, and you want to tell someone, it might be a bit embarrassing to do so, but you love those moments when you suddenly you can sort of hear the voices of people in the past speaking across the centuries, really.
That's so exciting, and that's really fun, and I think it's great that you highlighted that, because at the end of the day, getting to actually hear people's voices and learn about their stories is really so edifying, I think, as a historian. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and for sharing such wonderful advice and talking to us a little bit about your journey in academia.
Well, thank you very much again, and I hope some of this will be of interest and use to your listeners.
Oh, I'm positive. And again, for everybody listening, I will be posting Professor Walsham's newest monograph in our episode notes. So please take a little bit to check that out. And good luck with everything that comes next, Professor Walsham. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Generations, Age, Ancestry, and Memory in the English Reformations.